Yeah, there's definitely a buzz out there from all the noise. So if you give the cows a new piece of grass or new pasture, when they go out there, they're making all kinds of noise, eating. And then if you listen some more, you'll hear the insects, you know, making their flight path and travels around the pasture. Also the birds, you know, definitely the catalog of bird calls that we get to hear out there every time we're moving animals or working out in the field is pretty rewarding too.
Welcome to the 390th installment of Ear to the Ground, the Land Stewardship Project's podcast on family farming, regenerative agriculture, community food systems, and local democracy. I'm Brian DeVore, editor of the Land Stewardship Letter. On a muggy September day in north central Wisconsin, I watched as Kevin Mahalko moved some polywire fencing so a group of his dairy heifers could crowd their way into a new grazing paddock. As the bovines tucked into the bright green stand to forage, we listened for signs of success. Sure enough, there was the satisfying sound of the cattle chomping away. But Kevin also had his ears tuned into other indications that the managed rotational grazing system he's been utilizing for the past 3 decades is working for the land, the animals, and his bottom line. "Listen to the insects," he told me. Yep, the electrical buzz of bees and other pollinators as they cruised from plant to plant in the diverse pasture could be heard. And then there were the birds. Meadowlarks, killdeer, and other grassland species could be heard, as well as seen. There were other, more charismatic signs that this operation was working in sync with the natural ecosystem. Earlier, Kevin had taken me to another part of the farm to see not one, but 2 bald eagle nests. The giant nests were separated from each other by roughly 100 yards of mixed hardwoods and pasture. As we watched, a giant eagle glided over the nest closest to us and settled in the further one. When the raptor swooped over that first nest, a hidden eagle, crouched down amongst stacked sticks and other materials, gave out a call. "That's what I was waiting for," Kevin said with a smile. Spend any length of time with this 54-year-old farmer, and it's clear he's passionate about 2 things, livestock grazing and ecological health. And after spending time touring his farm, which lies near the Yellow River and extensive stands of Northwoods forest land, I was struck at how Kevin has successfully blended these 2 passions. The farmer has deep roots in managed rotational grazing, which relies on utilizing perennial forages to produce meat and milk by moving livestock frequently between paddocks. Kevin studied wildlife and natural resources, as well as business in college. So, when he returned to the family farm, he sought out ways to balance profitable food production with environmental sustainability. He was struck at how pioneering rotational grazers in the region were using livestock to build soil health and keep the land covered year-round, all while producing meat and milk at a low cost and with a minimum of investment in inputs and equipment. So, in the mid-1990s, Kevin started transitioning the farm into a grass-based system. The farm started shipping certified organic milk in 2011, and today, its 45-head herd of Holstein cows is supplying 100% forage-based milk to Organic Valley Cooperative for its grass milk label. When I visited his farm, I saw firsthand how a pasture-based production system has allowed Kevin to produce milk without the use of antibiotics or petroleum-based fertilizers and pesticides, all while keeping fossil fuel use to a minimum. But it has also allowed him to farm in a way that supports the birds, the bees, and everything else in between. Kevin sees community building as a key way of sustaining a regenerative farming system. He has long served as a grazing instructor for the River Country Resource Conservation and Development Council, as well as the organizations Grassworks and Marble Seed. The farmer also invites school groups to tour his land, and nursing students, as well as ornithology students, have hiked the operations pastures and woods to see firsthand the relationship between regenerative livestock production, biologically active soil, wildlife habitat, and healthy food. After he gave me a tour, Kevin and I sat down for a chat. While tourists on their way to nearby Lake Holcomb buzzed by the farm on a busy state highway, the farmer talked about what drew him into grazing in the first place, how he uses ecological indicators like healthy bird and insect populations to monitor success on the farm, and what it's like to see eagles flying overhead while doing chores. He also shared why it's important for those folks driving by to realize that a farm like his can play a key role in protecting the water and wildlands they value so much. So, Kevin, really appreciate it. You took me around and showed me your grazing system here, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about some of the connections you're making between your grazing system and wildlife habitat and bird habitat, that type of thing. But I was wondering if you could briefly just give me a little background on what drew you to grazing in the first place. So I know this was, your family was a conventional dairy, but what was it about grazing that when you decided you farming was for you, that was the, because you are really devoted to it. You've been very involved with the grazing movement in general. So it's obviously something you really believe in.
I think the biggest thing at first was the community of grazers that were, you know, farming and starting out back then. They were like some of the first farmers I ever met that were really willing to share, like open up their farm, you know, come out, have a pasture walk, like, you know, go to different grazing events and just get excited about farming again after, you know, many years of hearing about, oh, it's, you know, it's not possible to farm, you should go off to school and get a different career. So they brought a positivity. And then, you know, the, like anything, you want to, if you're going to be in business, you have to, you know, have a type of business that can make enough money to cover the costs. They were really good about, you know, talking about you can make the profit per cow off of milk or beef while, you know, utilizing the pasture. I think what, from my standpoint, really having a background in wildlife and liking nature, conservation, biodiversity, even at those early years of like looking at solutions to soil health, erosion, climate, and all that, you know, it was very attractive.
Well, that's a good point. You studied wildlife biology or wildlife management in college, and then you switched to business. And so it seems like maybe a combination of those two a little bit, kind of working with nature, but also it's got to pay the bills.
Absolutely. What I see is in the grazing world of farmers, we have, you know, some larger to medium small scale dairy that's, you know, making their income strictly off of the dairy farming. You also have, you know, beef direct marketing, could be, you know, poultry also. To be at a scale to actually make a living at it takes a huge commitment, but it is possible, and I've had the pleasure to know a lot of different farmers that have been able to do that.
So you kind of got serious about managed rotational grazing in the mid-90s. Do you remember a time when you were able to walk out there in the paddocks and, or maybe were in the milk room or whatever, and you went, okay, this is working? Because that's quite a transition. A lot of people give it a shot and then maybe it doesn't work out, whatever. But did you have a day when you had kind of an epiphany that you went, oh, okay, I think this is working?
Well, I think when we went from doing like, you know, partially grazing and then partially green feeding, and then just like finally got the portable fencing and the polywire for the first time, that we're able to go out and, you know, make the fences and then and be able to do that twice a day and see the moves and see the cows milking on it and see them like still have a like high quality milk, low somatic cell count, you know, that was really, you know, rewarding to know that we could feed the cows strictly from the grazing.
So one of the things, speaking of your interest in conservation, you just took me out to a paddock and we waited a little bit, but finally we were rewarded. You have got not but one, but two active bald eagle nests on your farm. It looks like they're about 100 yards apart in two giant white pines there on the edge of one of your paddocks. And as we were talking, here came an eagle, swooping in, went to the one tree, and then there was one we couldn't see in the other tree that was talking to it. I could tell that was super, that's part of what farming is all about for you. And can you talk a little bit about how kind of connecting that, seeing wildlife out there, seeing the life? We kind of went through some other paddocks and we were looking at some of the bugs and listening for stuff. And I really got a sense that it wasn't just like an extra thing. Oh, that's nice. This is really an important, integral part of why you're farming.
Yeah, that's the field where those trees are is one of our first fields that we grazed on. So that was like converted over to pasture. And just over the years to, you know, be out there for so many years in a row and then see that, you know, eagle start building a nest up there and seeing even like, you know, sticks and twigs that it brought over and that it actually nested up there, was successful, had, you know, successful in nesting and then propagating, you know, more bald eagles into the family. So I guess to me it's like when we look to the west side of the farm, we see those two huge white pines, and I thought, you know, maybe like, you know, renaming the farm White Pine Eagle or Dairy or something like that would be kind of cool. But to be able to be out there working and then look up and see eagles in your sight of vision while you work is pretty amazing. Yeah, that's a huge reward.
You've seen other birds too. Can you talk about some of the other birds you see out in the paddocks in there? It's a sign that maybe the grassland system you've got going here is not just good for the cows, but it is good for the birds.
Yeah, a couple of the ones species we'll see is in the springtime, where we have a huge bobolink population out here. So they're flying around, they're nesting, they're communicating. You know, it's just really kind of a neat energy that they have out there. Plus, meadowlarks we'll see out there is a good grassland indicator. Other things we see pretty regularly are like a lot of different finches, bluebirds, different grassland sparrows, and it's really, really nice to see that.
Well, we were at another paddock. You were moving fencing for a group of heifers, and you kind of made the comment that when you're out there and you hear them, the cattle, kind of that thrum of them eating the forage once they go into a new paddock, combined with the sound of the birds and then the insects, it really makes it, you just like, oh, this is all kind of working together a little bit.
Yeah, there's definitely a buzz out there from all the noise. So if you give the cows a new piece of grass or new pasture, when they go out there, they're making all kinds of noise, eating, taking their tongue and snipping off a bunch of grass with their teeth, and you know, they're happy eating out there. So there's like a rhythm they have, like just a chomp, 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 you know, type thing. And then if you listen some more, you'll hear the insects, you know, making their flight path and travels around the pasture. Also the birds, you know, definitely the catalog of bird calls that we get to hear out there every time we're moving animals or working out in the field is pretty rewarding too.
Is it a sign indicator for you that maybe because when you see more birds, you realize maybe I have more, my forage, I have good quality forage, and then therefore my cattle are doing well and my dairy system is doing well. The birds are the real evident indicator, but does that help kind of, you then go down the line and go, okay, this is working, and it's making it so I can kind of be a viable farm?
My thought is that once you see the birds out there, it means that a lot of other good things have happened, because the birds require the highest form of habitat. So I guess if we're taking care of the soil, taking care of the plants, taking care of the cows, well then the wildlife also has a lot of good habitat out there. You know, this whole idea of having multi-species, multi-storied, solar collector type of agriculture is really appealing, and then every layer of your plant structure, you have different forms of life, and you know, the whole food chain out there, from you know, the earthworms all the way up to us, that's what we're working towards.
So this isn't all just easy, and you even said when you first got into grazing, people said, well, you just kick your feet up on the porch and watch the cattle go to work, but there's a lot of, and I got a sense of it even today, how much you were moving, because you're moving paddocks every day, and you've got the heifer herd and you've got the milking herd, and so you it's really a lot of moving around, a lot of going through fencing, managing your pastures, you know, you have to balance that with hay production and all of that. So it's a lot of effort, you got to kind of think ahead and plan ahead a little bit. Considering all of that, you've got to get rewarded financially for this, to kind of go to this extra work. So you're able to, you're certified organic, so you get a premium there, but also you have the grass milk system, and yes, you get a premium for that. I guess maybe first explain what is involved with grass milk production as opposed to regular organic production, but then how important is it to have that market incentive in there for you to be kind of be able to do some of these things that are good for the environment?
To get certified to do the grass milk, we actually do get a third party certification from Grass Plus, so we get certified as being like a grass-based farm also. You know, there are definitely some more requirements. It's definitely a feeding system where, you know, we're feeding a lot more forage both in the grazing season and in the winter, because we have to produce a lot of energy from the, you know, strictly from pasture. The biggest thing that I like about it is we've been able to get into a completely new market, which I thought always would have support. It's really great to have the organic market, and then to have another option within even the organic market has been great. So we have get a premium for doing the grass product. And it does come up with a little bit of a trade-off in lower milk production per cow, so we have to offset some of this. So it all has to have to make a business sense. If we're really taking good care of the pasture, it's an economic incentive to have that market too. It can really work, I think, to provide another healthy product out there, plus, you know, another reward for the farmers.
One of the things I noticed as we were out in the pasture here and out in the paddocks is campers going by, people going by with their boats, and we're near the what's the town? Is it Holcomb?
Yeah, Lake Holcomb,
and then the Chippewa and the Flowage here. It's a very big recreational area, and so people come here to get away from their urban or suburban lives or whatever and get a little piece of nature. I couldn't help but think, so great, they're going to this beautiful spot on the Chippewa River and all of that, but if they only knew, I don't think they give a second thought to, when they drive by a farm like this, the contribution you're making to wildlife habitat, cleaner water, because this is a vulnerable watershed up in here, and just kind of biodiversity in general. I was just wondering, do you ever think about that? That, you know, that might help with the market situation as well as some of the policy folks support, if they kind of maybe thought more about, weren't so focused on, this is the place where I'm going to get my nature fix, but the farms actually contribute to that. You know, they help where they're camping, that water can be cleaner if there's a farm like this doing what you're doing.
I think that outreach to the public is really important. We have events on the farm, you know, it's kind of internal to the grazing networks, but we do invite the public out. We've worked with the land conservation department in our county. We definitely like try to work also with our legislators to have them aware of, you know, the issues, the need for conservation out on the land, and also, like, you know, some things that can be done to support conservation farmers. I personally would like to get it, like, through the market, through, you know, people that want to support this style of farming. But also, it's nice when, like, the societal benefits of having clean water, you know, down throughout the entire watershed onto those lakes everybody is using, in the fishing and in the habitat health. You know, it's coming from good farm management. I think any time a farmer can get rewarded for that, it's a good incentive. The other thing is I just like the fact that we do live on a state highway and we can showcase that. You know, I'm sure a lot of people drive by and like to see the countryside. You know, hopefully ours is adding to that, the beauty of Wisconsin. It's a big deal to me. That's like, Wisconsin ag is a huge tradition. Our forestry is a big tradition too. And being able to go out on the land, go through a nature hike through the woods, and then go out on the waters is it is a huge part of life in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and you're able to get rewarded, I guess I would think, a little bit, in that you have a lot of school groups out. You've had nurses come out here, and I think you had a ornithology class come out from a college. And so you're able to show that connection between working farmland and a working ecosystem a little bit.
Yes, it's really impressive to have students and, you know, even people that haven't had a lot of exposure to farm life. You know, get them out here, show it for, you know, like an hour or so, and then get hands-on and like listen to what questions they have, and then even like see, you know, what their perspective is of what it would be like to be a cow and all that. You know, that type of question makes a good opportunity for people to think about, you know, what is needed and what's going on out on the land. So to get the kids excited and to get people thinking about like how they would fit it right into the landscape is really important.
I think they probably detect a little bit of your joy too, maybe.
Yeah, I think it definitely would rub off. So yeah, it's, I think, a part of a healthy lifestyle, honestly, being on a farm and like setting it up so you can get your daily walks in, you can do the work in a way that is like healthy exercise, and to eat as, you know, well as you can. You know, we have a lot of home-raised food, you know, the beef and, you know, some dairy, you know, right here off the farm. And growing vegetables, you know, in a garden in the summer, that's always a pretty key thing, too.
So what's the coolest thing you've kind of, in your farming career, that you, something that just you really, you think about that day or that you've seen on the farm or you've experienced on the farm, you're like, wow, this makes all the work worth it. Maybe almost makes it all worth it.
Well, I've had a lot of really good field days. So, like, always at the end of those, you know, when the people go away happy and, you know, we've had good conversations and people are thinking and smiling and even enjoying some of the food, you know, that's definitely a highlight. And I think, like, my yearly highlight is typically the Grassworks conference that we do in January, mainly because it's the winter time. We're not in the peak of the grazing season, so to get everybody together with that energy and looking forward to the next growing and grazing season is always a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you started out the interview talking about that. The networking and the community is so key. It's that farmer-to-farmer thing. Whenever you're doing something innovative that's out of the norm, out of the box, thinking out of the box, that must be really key.
Yeah, I looked at, when I started grazing and met some of the, you know, first people that were, you know, grazers around our area and around the state, I've always been impressed by the passion and enthusiasm of those grazers that were willing to share all their knowledge with us, like when I was a young kid starting out. And, you know, just the wisdom and the joy and the happiness a lot of them had in sharing that, it was very unique within the farm community. So I couldn't have gone into a better field of farming.
So what's your favorite bird?
That's an unfair question.
Like I was mentioning earlier, I really like having the eagles out there. But I guess, like, I would say my favorite is actually the bluebirds. Mm. I really like the color and, you know, just a little bit of the personality they have flying around. And to think that they made it on that big journey to their nesting grounds, too, is pretty impressive.
Well, and it's, like I said before, that's a super good indicator. They like the fact that you're organic and that you have grassland habitat, because they really rely on insects, and they've suffered in areas where the insect populations, it's an example of how it's all connected, where the insects go down, the bluebirds go down. So you're kind of hitting it out of the park as far as providing them the habitat, but also the food that they need. So that is a really good indicator.
Yeah, I like to see them come back every year, and you know, they stay, they're still here in the fall right now, and I guess maybe I should say my favorite bird is the eagle, because they're here all year, so they managed to tough it out just like we have to do in Wisconsin.
Now here's a little bonus. While Kevin and I were taking a look at that grazing area where the two bald eagle nests are located, we started chatting about why he had combined his love for wildlife with farming. As if on cue, we were interrupted by that eagle sighting I had mentioned earlier. Here's a little field audio of that encounter with the wild.
One reason I went into conservation, I even had the thought of, like, you know, what did this...
Oh, there's our eagle. Now, which nest is it going to go to? Oh, what a... That's great. I think you're right. Or, just keep going.
Yeah, he's heading out right there.
So. Yep, you're right. Oh, there we go! Oh, very cool.
That's what I was waiting for.
Just on cue. That's what we were waiting for.
Should have videoed that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, now we got the color.
Oh, so I think there's one in this nest because I can hear it. They're calling to each other. I'll be danged. For more on how regenerative grazing can support ecological health profitably, see the podcast page for Ear to the Ground episode 390 at landstewardshipproject.org. There, you'll see links to other Ear to the Ground podcasts on farms that are using regenerative methods to support wildlife habitat. If you have comments or suggestions about this podcast, contact Brian DeVore at bdevore@landstewardshipproject.org, or you can call 612-816-9342. By the way, it helps us greatly if you can give Ear to the Ground a rating on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And word of mouth is the best way to spread the news about our podcast. If you like what you hear, tell at least one person about LSP's Ear to the Ground. Thanks to Laura Borgendale, Western Minnesota musician, for Ear to the Ground's theme music. And a special thank you to all of Land Stewardship Project's members who make initiatives such as this podcast possible. If you're not a member, visit landstewardshipproject.org to learn how you can support LSP. Thanks for listening.